New York City Ballet was founded in 1948 by George Balanchine and Lincoln Kirsten and has become one of the world's top dance companies. Jock Soto was a principal dancer with the NYCB for 20 years, and he was one of the last dancers handpicked by Balanchine for the company. He was also one of the most choreographed on dancers at NYCB. After he retired in 2005, he became a teacher and also a caterer, and now he's written a memoir called Every Step You Take. It's published by HarperCollins. I'm very pleased that it brought Jock Soto to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
The main theme of your memoir is your difficulty in reconciling your Navajo and Puerto Rican roots with the life that you've made for yourself as a dancer and gay man in New York City. Isn't just being a mix of Navajo and Puerto Rican pretty rare in itself?
You mean being a mutt?
I didn't mean that. I've spent some time in the Navajo Nation, and it was my sense that any kind of mixed marriage is rather discouraged.
It is discouraged, especially in the Navajo Nation. And my grandparents were not very keen on the idea, of course, and kind of made it difficult for my father in the beginning.
How did they meet?
My mother and father met in a bar in Philadelphia, and my mother was there with a colleague. She was going to nursing school, and my dad was just hanging out in the bar, and he went up to her and asked her to dance.
And you then went back to the Navajo Reservation. That's where you spent your early childhood?
Early childhood, yes.
Then what happened?
And then we moved to Arizona. We were obviously in Arizona, but we moved to Phoenix because my father was trying to get us away from the reservation.
Because the Navajo territory, which is in the top of Arizona, is almost like a separate country. It has its own laws. It has its own radio stations.
Yeah, and it there's not really anything to do there. There's no work. There's a McDonald's and a Burger King.
Your mother was your first dance teacher, wasn't she?
Yes.
What was she teaching you?
She was teaching me the hoop dance, which is something that she did herself. She was originally she was the only female hoop dancer on the Navajo Reservation.
Well, she obviously is a nonconformist in a lot of ways. After all, she married outside the tribe.
Yes, and it's so funny because when I was writing this book, I found out that she and I were very similar in a lot of ways.
You describe your father, Jose, as a macho Puerto Rican man. Did he support your dancing?
He did. He did it. At first, he was kind of, you know, he thought it was sort of a sissy thing to do. But when I turned 11, I kind of wanted to do something else. And he actually was the one who told me, you know, keep going.
When was it apparent to you that you were gay?
I think I knew all along. I never was really attracted to female and I'm just more attracted to the male.
So, but how apparent was that to people like members of your family?
I'm not one of those flamboyant people, so I think that to be a dancer and to be a male dancer on stage, you kind of have to look, you know, male.
Well, was it difficult for you to come out to your parents?
Yes, it was. But when I finally did come out to my parents, my mother started laughing, and she said, "We've known all along."
You were the subject of a documentary in 2008 called Water Flowing Together. Much of that film is about your childhood and Native American heritage. Was that the first time you really looked back at where you'd come from?
Yes, it was. And the director, Gwendolyn Cates, and I were very close, and it was the only way we could really kind of go back, because she spent a lot of time with my family. So, you know, we had to really think about which direction the documentary was going to take.
And your mother passed away that year as well. Could you have written this memoir if she was still alive?
No, I don't think so. I think that my mother wanted me to write this, and that's why I've done it.
How old were you when you came to New York?
At first I was 11, and
did you come by yourself?
No, my mother brought me. My brother and father were in California trying to pursue my brother's acting career, and my mother brought me here we stayed with my aunt in the Bronx, and I auditioned for the school, and I got in right away.
Which comes as a surprise. Had you done much ballet before that? Because they really have high requirements, don't they?
Yes, they, me now, being at the school, but...
That's the School of American Ballet.
Yes, that's right. Yes, you know, I started dancing when I was 3, 4, 5, so I loved doing it, and this is what I've always wanted to do. So, you know, when I got accepted into the school, I felt like Alice in Wonderland. You know, I didn't know what to expect, but, and you know, in where I came from, you know, a tiny little strip mall in Arizona, you know, to this huge institution was a dream come true.
And then you were a teenager living largely on your own for much of this time, weren't you?
Well, I left soon after that to because I got severe growing pains, and I had to quit dancing for about 6 months, and then re-auditioned for SAB when I was 13 and got accepted again.
Hmm. And were you on your own? Or, I mean, a 13-year-old kid?
I was on my own from 14 on, yeah.
This was the 1980s?
Yes.
When
well,
New
this
York-
was 1970-78.
Uh-huh. Yeah. The club scene was already in full swing?
Studio 54 was hopping.
And were you part of that?
Well, when I was about 15 and 16, yeah, I would sneak in.
It also was a time when AIDS was taking a terrible toll on large swaths of the art world. Did you lose friends to AIDS?
I did. I lost many friends. And you know, it's what's so weird is that, you know, when 1980 came around in 1981, when we started losing friends, we didn't even know it was AIDS. Nobody knew what it was. You know, they would call it Hodgkin's disease or some, you know, they'd just make something up, and you'd go and visit people in the hospital, and they'd have a quarantined, you know, sign. So we didn't know what was happening.
There's a wonderful play called Normal Heart, which is
about
that time.
Yeah.
So when did you first meet George Balanchine?
In 1980, he would come for our annual school workshops, and he would, you know, sort of rehearse you and tweak and do stuff, you know, and he came backstage after I had done a workshop for Stanley Williams, and he kind of just gave suggestions and didn't that, you know, just seeing him, you know, standing next to you or walking through the hallways was just, it was like God was walking, you know, and we would just sort of like all, you know, be shaking and you know, we would bow and do stuff, you know, that you would never think you would do.
And you and Darcy Kistler were among the last dancers he picked for
yes.
the company. But you didn't have much time with him. He died in 1983.
Yeah, he got sick fairly quickly, and I do remember once I was watching a ballet that Peter Martins had choreographed, The Magic Flute. I was watching the rehearsal with Eve Anderson and Darcy Kistler, and he came up to me during the rehearsal, and I stood up, and he said to me, he said, watch him, because you can learn. And he said to me, watch all of them, because you'll learn. And that was a very fond memory.
But he didn't choreograph anything on you?
No, no. The music you were playing before we started this interview was Mozartiana, and that was the first actual piece he put me in.
Mm-hmm. You're doing something that somebody else had originated. You are one of the people who has had a lot of pieces choreographed on. That's ballet talk. It means
yes.
you were the dancer who the choreographer... choreographer developed the piece with?
Yes. I was very fortunate to have a lot of people choreograph on me, and the first was, of course, Peter Martins, and that sort of made me feel very special and important, because when people would come in and choreograph on you feel kind of like, oh, so I'm actually okay, I'm doing well, you know. So, yeah, I've been very fortunate that way.
Your first strong partnership as a principal in the New York City Ballet was with Heather Watts. And you refer to her and Peter Martins as your surrogate parents. Now, she was much older than you. Was that weird, dancing with somebody who... I mean, don't they try to match people age-wise as well as talent-wise?
Well, I think Peter saw me as an older soul. He did say to Heather that, you know, I'm already grown up. I was already grown up by the time we started dancing with each other. She's a decade older than me, but I kind of always looked mature.
And then Christopher Wilden also started choreographing on you.
Yes, he did.
That has to be very exciting. He's one of the greatest choreographers of our time.
Yes, he is. He is, and he certainly works quite a bit.
This was later in your career. Like, he did After the Rain. That just premiered 6 months before you retired.
Yeah, I started working with him when I was 30. So.
Well, 30 isn't all that old in the real world.
I thought that I was going to retire at 30, so, you know, I had an extra 10 years.
And there's an incredible wear and tear of dancing on the body. Is 40 kind of old for a dancer?
I found 40 to be the perfect age for me to retire. I just felt that it kind of rounded out my whole career. And, I wanted to leave the stage while I was still dancing well.
But when you retire at 30 or 40, you have a long life ahead of you. What did you think you were going to be doing after you left?
My initial thought was that I would open a restaurant, and my partner Luis said to me, he said, why don't you go to culinary business school? And I said, oh, well, that's a good idea, because then I would know how to run a restaurant. You know, so that was the first thing that I did when I retired.
When you're in a ballet company like the New York City Ballet, do people help you? Do they give you advice on how to prepare for retirement?
There's no booklet. There's none, you know, nobody tells you how to do that. And you just have to, what I did is I thought, you know, I have to leave this career gracefully. And I know it's going to be a horrible thing because it's the only thing I've ever done my whole life. But, you know, I kind of just forged into my new career.
Have you escaped the problems that so many dancers have had? They wind up with hip replacement surgery and...
I've never had surgery, knock on wood, ever.
Did you dance in pain, I imagine?
I did many times. I've danced with torn calves and, made it worse. I think that was probably my worst injury.
You partnered with Heather Watts in her retirement performance in 1995, and you even wrote a cookbook together in 1997 called Our Meals.
Yes.
You were obviously already interested in pursuing food as another career.
I've always been interested in food. I just couldn't eat. But yeah,
you couldn't eat because you'd be putting on weight.
Well, I mean, you don't want to put on weight and then go on stage in a white unitard. You know, it's a bit revealing. So, you know, I chose to eat well, but
now you're teaching and you've written this memoir, and as I said, you've started a catering company with your partner Luis Fuentes. He's a chef.
He's a chef and a sommelier, yes.
Well, both.
Yes.
Your company is called Lucky Basset Events. What
well,
is that name?
We have a basset hound that all the men in New York City Ballet got me for my retirement, and his name is Tristan, and he got sick twice with pneumonia, so we consider him a lucky basset.
You include recipes in this memoir.
Yes.
Including Grandma Rachel's Navajo fry bread.
Yes.
You can't get decent fry bread in New York City.
No, and I mean, I think that if you have to eat it, you know, not a lot of it. It's very fattening.
Uh-huh.
But it's very good.
And you're also teaching at the School of American Ballet. You teach men. Is it possible to teach women as well, or are the roles so different? I remember many people telling me that Balanchine thought that the only thing men really should be able to do is to pick up the ballerina.
Well, the tradition with the school is that men teach men and women teach women, and that's I do teach I teach from the boys from 10 to 19, but I do teach partnering class twice a week, so I get to also teach with the girls.
And when you audition kids, what do you look for?
Well, you look for the body type. You look for the talent, obviously. I go scouting I do 5 trips a year to audition for kids.
The book is called Every Step You Take, Jacques Soto. The picture on the cover is of a very young Jacques Soto, looking young.
Well, thank you.
How old were you when this picture was taken?
I was 15.
And the book is published by HarperCollins,
yes.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.